You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Well, I've had the odd little technical hitch here this afternoon, but anyway, we're there now, and I believe we should have Grant Hutchison on the phone. Are you there, Grant?
Absolutely, Alan. It's an absolute delight to be with you.
It's great to be talking to you too, mate. Now, we sent you away the question last week, and I think it was about trusts, wasn't it, and powers of attorney.
Yep, and happy to talk about powers of attorney and how important they are. Let's. Do you have the precise question? Because I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah,
you
know, the question was that you give someone a power of attorney and you say, I want certain things to happen. But how can you assure that that power of attorney is applied the way that you want it applied?
Now, look, good question. And there are different types of powers of attorney, and one that I think is becoming increasingly well known is the medical treatment
yep.
power of attorney.
Yep.
And if you want to make sure that they do what you want, you would combine that with what's called an advanced care directive. So in other words, the power of appointment, the power of attorney appoints the person, and the advanced care directive tells them what to do. It directs them in terms of what to do. The advanced care directive is an interesting document. Lawyers can provide the paperwork, but it's really something you need to sit down with your doctor to get done.
Is it?
The first question is, what are your current medical conditions? And as much as I like to think that, Dr. Google can help, I know Dr. Grant can't. And I don't think you'd want me telling you what your medical conditions are. So you need to sit down and put down your medical conditions. Those things that are important to you in life is the next question. Do you enjoy walks in the park? Do you like reading a book? Do you like... And once people know those things, you know, spending time with family, all of those things, once they know what's important to you, then they can... That helps inform the decisions they might have to make, and you can actually go the next step and actually say, if this happens, I'm directing you to do this. So yeah, you appoint the person, but you can direct them. And that's referred to in the medical treatment power of attorney. It's, they've read and understood your directives.
Yeah, because I think, if I remember that rightly, and I know it's in mine, I've said to my kids, if I can't, I don't want to be revived just to be a vegetable. And the question asks, the person asks something like that. How can you be assured that they don't just decide, I'm going to have them revived anyway, that if your wishes are, you go, that then you're allowed to go?
Well, there's two questions there that are raised by that point. First of all, if it's family members and they know how you think, they can generally make that decision themselves when the situation arises. So I think it makes sense that... quite often, spouse to spouse situation, they'll often know how you think, and in different scenarios will know how to respond.
I think the question was, though, this person has two children, and that one... And they don't always agree, and they would both have different ideas.
Well, then the great thing about a medical treatment power of attorney, which is different to normal powers of attorney, which I'll turn to in a moment, you can only appoint one person at a time.
Oh, can you?
Doctors don't want two people arguing about what should happen next in front of them. They just want one person. So you can appoint a person, your medical treatment power of attorney, and then you can say, and if that person, as an alternative to that person, I have a different person, but it's only one at a time. It's like
that's better. Yep.
Does that make sense? So doctors don't have to have, there's no voting, or it's just one person makes the decision and tells the doctors, this is the directive. This is what's going to happen next.
Because under a normal power of attorney, that can happen, can't it? That you can have two attorneys and one can argue against the other one.
Absolutely. If you appoint them jointly rather than joint and several, then yes, you can have them arguing or disagreeing, and therefore you're at a stalemate. But let's deal with the medical treatment first. Yep. Medical treatment, it's an important document, not to be confused with euthanasia. it's really just about who will make the decision. Now, with when that person has the power, they may exercise it, hopefully in a way that accords with your moral compass, your life and death decision making.
Yep.
And that could be a totally different person to the one that would look after your financial or personal needs.
Yep.
So you can always give specific directions on the medical treatment power of attorney, but more likely you would do an advanced care directive if you weren't sure that they would do what you want. So that's but it can be locked in, so to speak. Yeah. The other one is, do you want to do a song or do you want to deal with the other types of powers of attorney?
No, I'm happy to continue on.
Okay. No, I'm pleased. So the other types are, and the other two come out normally in the same document. It's a personal and a financial. Everybody knows what a financial power of attorney is.
Yep.
It's enduring. It endures beyond your own capacity. So the medical treatment, by the way, only has impact when you can't communicate your wishes. Up until that point.
Yep.
It's like it's just a piece of paper that will be activated if you can't communicate your wishes. But as long as you can communicate, you rule supreme. The people can't secretly be having meetings behind your back while you can communicate cogently,
right.
You know, as long as you have capacity. With the financial, that's really they can use your money to put you into an aged care and pay for a RAD. They can sell your house. They can sell your car. They can buy you a boat. They can do whatever. But they have to do it with your interests. They shouldn't buy themselves a catamaran that they'll use that has nothing to do with you. It's got to be, if they have the power, it can only be exercised or used to advance the interests of the person who's donating the power. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yep.
So, and that's something which is, you'd normally keep an exercise book saying, well, you know, I took out $20 and spent it on groceries. Here's the receipts. Because you want to not just do the right thing, but if scrutinized, if asked 2 years later, why did you do this? You can show the proof. So it's best to have an exercise book, date, reason, amount, and here's the receipts. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Grant, I've got to take a quick break. But one of the other questions we did ask you was about when money was put in a trust for a community and organisation, does the trustees, can they just agree to spend money out of that trust, or if it's on behalf of an organisation, shouldn't the whole board of that organisation have the power, that, or shouldn't they be the ones that sign off? I'll let you think about that while we take this quick break.
Step ahead of you, stay in motion, keep an open mind. Love is a race won by two. Your emotion, my solitude. If I stop, I could lose my head, so I'm losing you instead. We'll be right back.
as Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
That was a 2023 version of a split-end song. How about that? Which was one step ahead. I'm talking to Grant from Hutchinson Legal. Are you there, Grant?
Yes, I am.
Right. So how did we go with the truss?
Well, the question really is, let's leave aside the issue of the trust, because I think what you're saying is that when somebody gives money to a charity, they're trusting that the money will be used for charitable purpose. Well, let me finish and then I'll come to your clarification. I don't want to be speaking across you. But look, if I give money to a charity, the question of should the board meet to decide or not as to how the money's, whether it's through a through a trust or not, is a question of the nature of the gift. Quite often in a will, you'll see a provision saying, I give to the Royal Melbourne Hospital, $200 or $200,000, and the receipt of the treasurer is sufficient discharge to my executor, and it's for the general purposes. So that could be used for whatever. Yep. Now, you've got a particular situation where I think sometimes people say, I want it to be used for the lost dog's home, or I want this only to be spent on, homeless dogs in the area, and you've given it to the RSPCA. How do you make sure that the particular gift is given? Is that more what your question's about?
No. If somebody donates to an organisation and said, we're going to give you $50,000 and we want you to use the interest of that for X or Y, and so that organisation appoints two or three trustees. The trustees look at it. Can they make the payment? Shouldn't it go back to the board of the organisation where the money was donated and they're the ones that sign off on it?
Thank you for the further clarification.
Which you didn't want.
No. Let me see if I can repeat back to you what I think I've heard. Yep. And make sure that... So I give money and I say this is to be held on trust to pay for, to provide for dogs and cats that are lost in the Yarra Valley area and only for that purpose.
Yep.
It's to be held on trust for that purpose. So should it go back to the board or should it... And I'm trusting Fred, Joe and Peter to do that.
Yes, yeah.
As trustees of the trust. The question would be, was the trust set up just Fred, Joe and Peter as trustees of a new separate trust to look after to that? And then there's no need to go back to an organisation because they have their own... ambit, their own particular requirement. Yep. But if it's, say, look, I'd like Fred, Joe and Peter to look after it, but the money's to be channeled through a tax-deductible organisation, which happens to be the RSPCA, that would be a complicated gift to receive. And I've heard of instances where gifts have been declined if they come with conditions that take an organisation outside their normal modus operandi. So you can be too clever by half and leave yourself where the organisation will say, well, look, no offence. Because I have heard of an organisation, what they did is they said, we'd like you to have this... I think it was a donation. I remember one organisation was donated various books and things, and it was to be, so it wasn't money, it was books. And the organisation that received it said, no offence, but we don't want those books.
Oh, yeah.
So whether it's, with respect, you can take your books and...
You'd be polite. Be polite.
No, take your books and read them again yourself.
Grant, I've got to take another break and we'll get off that subject. Sure. I've got something else that we want to talk to you first and then we'll move on.
Now you can't blame the city for how you feel.
listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
I'm talking to Grant from Hutchinson Legal. Grant, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you again now. Thanks. Grant, I think we're on pretty safe grounds talking about this because we've had a phone call just in the last few minutes. We know there was a major sentence handed down on Monday, so I believe we're right to talk about that, aren't we? Well, anyway, we don't want to talk about that necessarily. The question's been asked. Now, I think this person has so many days to lodge an appeal. What the question is, what now? I mean, if they don't lodge an appeal, then that's the end of it. That sentence stands, as I understand it, and you're going to tell us that. But if they decide to appeal, then what? How does it flow? Like, how long does it take roughly, and what's the process?
Okay. Now, so I'll give you a quick. So there's two grounds. So you're right. If they don't appeal, then the sentence stands as is.
Yep.
And if they do appeal, there's two bases on which they can appeal. One is as to guilt, and the other is the issue of the sentence imposed. So one, they could say, look, I was found guilty, but I wasn't guilty. There were these mistakes made as to law or as to very hard to question a judge on facts, but on law, that they believe that this was wrong. In terms of the sentence, they could say, look, the sentence was unfair, unreasonable on the following grounds. So there's two, as to sentence and as to guilt or as to whether they should have been found guilty of that particular charge or should have been found guilty of a lesser charge. So,
right.
Does that make sense? So yep. there's a different grounds of appeal, and I am... We'll wait and see what happens next.
Grant, is it 28 days that they've got to appeal? Am I right on that, or was that just something I've imagined?
I thought it was 30, but right. I'd need to check rather than...
let's say it's roughly a month.
Yeah. You've got... Or is it 60 days? I'm not sure. So let me just pull it up while we... but what the issue for you is... How can I? What would you say? So how long do you have to appeal a Supreme Court sentence of guilt? What's your next question while I do that?
Well, I don't know. I've got one for you to take away, but I won't give you that yet because I need you to be able to write that down.
I can write down now.
Right.
Now, by the way, if you want to, I can come in on your other acts, other. Means of talking if you want to.
No, I've done away with that now. Okay. I've taken it out of the studio. Look, Grant, I'll take a quick break and
sure.
I'll get that out the way and then we'll come back and we'll talk
Thanks,
about
mate.
What you've got.
when I go to see the Lord. There before the pearly gates with all the rich and the poor. If I've been good, if I've been bad, or somewhere in between. If it's all the same to you, I'd say it's time for me to leave. I'll go sailing on, sailing on, I'm sailing on.
And gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. The voice of the valley was 24 minutes to two, and we talked to Grant Hutchison. Grant, how did you go what sort of time limit is in place on appeals?
I find this really hard to say, Alan, but you were right and I was wrong.
No, I wasn't right. I had a guess.
Well, your guess is 30 days, you guessed 28, and you are correct. It's you have 28 days from the date of the sentence yep. to file a notice of appeal, but I'm right in this sense. Lawyers are always trying to twist it.
Always right, yep.
So if you miss that deadline...
Yep.
You can apply to the court for an extension of the time.
Yep.
But it's granted in exceptional circumstances. It shouldn't be something you just couldn't get around to, so you'll just give it a go. You'd want to set out why you didn't do it. So in this case...
All right.
So 28 days, if you're counting down the days for poor old... for anybody convicted, and when I say poor old, I don't really mean that, because if you've done the crime, you do the time.
So, Grant,
what you were taught
in that 28 days, if they lodge an appeal, do they have to lodge all their objections, have they got 28 days to say we are going to appeal?
That's a great question for next week. Normally you would... look, you're given 28 days not just to simply put in a I'm going to appeal statement.
Isn't it? Yep.
You need to give some... put some flesh on the bone. Remember, there's two grounds. Yep. That is against the fact that you shouldn't have been found guilty, so the criminal conviction itself, or yep. the severity of the sentence. So people don't generally appeal and say the sentence was too light. Although yep. the Crown can appeal and say the sentence was too light, just as the defendant can appeal and say the sentence was too harsh.
That's fair.
And that has happened, where the Crown believes, or the prosecution believes, that it should be stricter or tougher.
A longer term.
Yeah.
All right.
But so, no, I don't... Keep going.
No, well, I'm going to give you... I don't want you to answer this one yet, but I want you to answer for next month. And it's about adverse possession. That's now what I understand. A piece of land has been taken into somebody else's land, either by mistake or by error. The fence has been put up in the wrong spot. It gives somebody a bit of land that belongs to somebody else. How... First of all, is that adverse possession? And if so, how do they prove, therefore, how long does it have to be that they've had that piece fenced off? And how does it have to have been the one owner that had it off, or could that property have been sold on a number of times and nobody bothered to check the boundaries? And therefore, I guess we're trying to find out what the rules are for adverse possession.
Okay. Well, I think that's a great question, and I'd love to answer it. I was only dealing with... But I think you want it for next month,
yep.
and I think it's a great question. So I suppose the basic part is, A, what is adverse possession?
Yes, yep.
And then, secondly, there's particular... fence, and that often is how it arises, where fence is moved
yep.
From or was originally erected in the right spot. What is it? How does it work? And
how do they prove? And the other issue that's been asked, and we've had a phone call on this, as to how long it has to be, and does it have to have been the one person? Like, if that fence was in the wrong spot and the house is sold three or four times, even though it wasn't the same person, does adverse possession still work the same?
Yeah, and there, look, as I say, I could answer it now if you want me to, but yep. I think that would spoil the yep. anticipation for next month.
Absolutely.
But tell me, what's it like out in the... I'm really missing not being out there with you.
Mate, I'm missing your smiling face. We're not talking on all
I
the songs.
I think it's around. So much easier to smile when I can see you, and you're a very jovial chap, but you just love talking about topics, that some of which we stay away from. But,
which one?
we won't mention the unmentionable topic.
No, we won't.
But, no, what else is... Do you want to talk about negotiation?
Yes, I was going to say, you tell me about negotiations. You tell me that's how lawyers negotiate. So I'd be very surprised how a lawyer negotiates with another lawyer.
Well, it's do you remember the movie The Negotiator, which I think it was Denzel yeah. Washington, and it was where a negotiator's negotiating with a negotiator.
Yep.
So the guy that normally talks people down from a terrible, you know, where they're holding people ransom or whatever it is, they're stuck in a situation and the negotiator comes in to try to,
yep.
you know, get things moving. And this guy finds himself being set up for a crime, and he, in the end, is in the opposite position. Another negotiator is called in to negotiate. And that's a bit like lawyers. They do it all the time. And so what's it going to look like? It's not the easiest thing. But there are really five key words when it comes to negotiation.
Yep.
And I think one is you want clarity. Can you think of what the other five words would be?
No, I was going to say honesty, but that's probably not in negotiation.
I think it helps. I think clarity, if you're dishonest and you lose trust...
Yep.
That undermines the whole process. So clarity, I think clarity has a sense of honesty, because if they tell you that white is black and you don't believe that, then what have you got to build something on?
Yeah.
I think two is communication.
Yeah.
Collaboration. The five is commitment.
Yeah.
What do you think the fourth one would be? Let's deal with those first, and then we'll keep people in suspense as they yep. wonder what the fifth aspect. So clarity, knowing what you're talking about, knowing what it is that, and trying to find out what the real cause of the dispute is, so that hopefully you can address that. If you wander all over the place, and if people aren't honest about what really hurts them, it can be that in a family situation, people are at loggerheads, but it has nothing to do with the issue that's really in front of them. It has something to do with...
Oh, yeah, we'll see that.
You know,
yep.
Somebody, you know, you poisoned my dog when we were, you know, 10 and 11, and I've never forgiven you, and so I'm never going to trust you, and, you know, all those things. So you deal with the issue, and you find out that Uncle Fred actually took out took out some chocolates, and that's what killed the dog, and you get to deal. If you're open and you're prepared to deal with those things, then you can work through, and there can be a sense of clarity around what's going on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But while people don't reveal what's really hurting them, it's really hard to negotiate. So it's clarity is so important. Now, negotiation also involves communication. So what do you think makes for good communication?
Well, one of the things is somebody who's prepared to listen.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, go on.
No, I think that's one of the major things, that everybody wants to put their view and keep pushing it, but at times you've got to sit, shut up and listen to the other person. Otherwise, you can't negotiate.
Yeah, okay. And absolutely right. So so communication, and you're right, it's... We've been given two ears, one mouth, and we
yep.
should use them in that proportion. In
yep.
fact, the question that you could ask yourself, which I'm not asking as I'm talking to you now, is, do I need to say that?
Yep.
Do I need to tell them this? Do I, you know, now, it's one thing, you can introduce irrelevant things, and it just clogs up the time and no one moves anywhere. All you're doing is spinning wheels. But there are other things that if you don't mention, you'll never resolve the conflict. So I think that's... So communication is key, but also being prepared to communicate. Be looking for body language. There are 100... You know, when you communicate, it's not just your words. It's your face. It's, as you said to me a few minutes ago, Grant, you don't sound as happy as normal.
Yep.
Well, if you turn up and you're as grumpy as, that communicates that you're... Well, maybe you see these people as a waste of time, and why are we here, and why would we bother? So I think you need to show, hopefully, a genuine interest in resolving the issues.
Yeah.
And that would come across. Collaboration. It means you're working together, and a commitment to what is ultimately decided. But the one that I think is... the one that I think is so important is the C word that I know is on the tip of your tongue. Because every man, woman and child is so good at this. Compromise.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I say that tongue-in-cheek because really, people love getting their own way.
Yes, yeah.
The idea that in most negotiations, people started off by, if you want to get everything your way, then you may or may not get that from the judge. But at a negotiation, it's about give and take. Yep. It's about recognising that if you want it all your own way, fight the matter through. But if you want to give and take, then... Because there's going to be things you win on and lose on, and that's part of negotiation. So if you're not prepared to compromise, you really just walk in to say, give me what I want.
Yeah.
And that's not negotiation. That's just a demand.
Yeah,
I agree with that. That's an ultimatum. Yep. So compromise. But compromise sometimes can come across as so important, and yet you can sometimes give up something that is of no great significance to you, but is of great significance to someone else. So let's say in a matrimonial, you're fighting about who gets to keep the dog or the cat or a piece of carpet.
Dogs apparently are a very hot topic in divorces, I've been told.
Yes, and they can spend a lot more than the cost of buy another dog, but because there's emotional attachment, particularly as there's a breaking up of the relationship, and there's a feeling of there will have been time spent. Dogs are wonderful animals that will come alongside you, and they look as if they care when all they're waiting for is their next meal.
Oh no, dogs do care. Cats don't.
You're quite right. I had that confused. Cats. So you're a dog person, not a cat person, obviously.
No, I am. But Grant, I've got to take a quick break, and then I want to come back to you and ask you one more quick question.
Feeling all right, move. Get lifted, don't stop, and you get it. Get to it, get closer, groove. Yeah, all right, I'll take you there. All right, I'll take you there. So do it, do it, do it, do it, do it.
Do it. Right now I love it, change the game, let's go, vamos, c'est quelque chose. Comme si, comme ça, wunderbar, the Autobahn is on the go. Zoom, zoom. So okay, 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 I am prepared, alright, I'll take you there. So do it, do it, do it, go get to it. Get it. Yeah, I got nothing to lose. Good time.
Stories, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Grant, it's you've been talking about negotiation. In the life of a lawyer, is it very often with a lawyer has to negotiate with his client and say, look, mate, I don't think you've got a hope of winning this case. I think you should, we should try and negotiate an outcome. Does that happen very often, or do people mainly want to go to court and trust their luck?
I still remember the first case, and I haven't lost many cases in my career. Not that I'm proud, but let's just say I don't go into litigation to lose.
Yep.
And I still remember the first time I ever lost a case, and I said to the guy, I said, look, here's the evidence against you. There's all of these things proving the complete opposite of what you tell me is the case. And I said, I cannot see a magistrate finding, because you clearly signed that you received X, Y, and Z. You signed these acknowledgements. Yep. Now you're saying you didn't get them. That is your signature. Yes, it is. Okay, well, I said, as far as I can see, you're going to lose. But I said, if you... And he said, well, I want to fight anyway. And I said, well, okay. I said, if you fight on principle, you don't fight on credit. He paid us up front and we fought hard and we lost. And all I can say is I didn't see any possible way of winning that case. Yep. But I tried to get him to see what I see as legal sense. So that was the... negotiate? No, it doesn't happen that often. Can I tell you, most people, because the other side were prepared to do a deal where they would have accepted half, and I went to him and said, look, the other side are offering you. And so instead he had to pay the full amount plus costs, plus our costs, of running a trial, and I just didn't see a hope for him. But that, so does it happen? Yes, it does. And it still hurts.
It hurts you?
Oh, it does. Well, it hurts me, because... I lost my first case ever, and it was a case that I still put down as a loss, even though I didn't see any prospect of winning it. So, but he wanted to take a roll of the dice, and the roll, well,
it didn't go as well.
Great, but I have heard of a case where somebody, the legal team, said to the person, you've got something like 1 in 1,000 chance of winning, and they won.
Grant, in a case, now we can talk about the one on Monday if it doesn't really matter, but
sure.
In a high profile case like that, if the person, the prosecutor or the defence wins, does it do a lot for their career, or do they just walk off from that high profile case and just take on another case and it doesn't have any effect at all?
I think the reality is it does something for them. It's better to win than lose. And if you can say, look, it's a certain profile. I don't remember the name of the prosecutor. Some people will know and know that that's a person who gets results. Of course, does it do something for them? Yes, it gives... I was talking to somebody who's flying up to Sydney to run a case up in Sydney, and he just said to me, it's a high-profile case, Grant, and it'll be in the media. And I think, look, I wouldn't say they're media junkies, but I don't think they're immune to the fact that there'll be some... celebrity is the wrong word, but they'll some of the fame of their... or infamy of their client will rub off on them.
That
makes it.
Yep.
So, remember... the story of the To Kill a Mockingbird. So winning doesn't necessarily make you popular. Remember in that in that famous book where the he won for the man who was falsely accused, it didn't make him popular throughout the trial or afterwards. Yep. But I think people understood why he defended.
Yep.
So hopefully people don't do it for fame.
Yep.
They do it because I think there should be an innate commitment to justice and making sure that people get a fair hearing. And
Grant,
I could go on.
Go on. I can see you want to move on.
I'm running out of time. Just quickly, Grant, have you ever heard of a case where nobody wanted to take it on? Where everybody said, this is you know, no hope, and I just don't want to take it. Have you ever, and I don't want to know who it was, but have you ever heard of a case when just nobody wanted to touch a case?
Absolutely.
Have you?
Pedophile cases. Who wants to
actually...
Let's just take it more... a real case that I can name is, of course... the case of the Boston Tea Party.
Yep.
The British soldiers that then shot and killed people were up on trial.
Yep.
There was people prepared to defend them, but not because they believed in the soldiers' right to kill civilians.
Yep.
When they dressed up as Indians and raided the ship and threw the tea overboard.
Yep. Yep.
But because they believed every person deserves a defence. Everybody has a chance to be defended. And one of those people went on to be a future president of the United States. By the way, I don't need to mention it's not the current president.
I wonder why you had to put that in.
I was trying to light things up. As you know, I just come from a palliative ward, so I wasn't as affable as normal when you started.
Grant, I got to go in half a tick, but if you've got a case where nobody wanted to take it on, And you say, like, people are...
Someone will take it out of a commitment.
So there's no mechanism where the court just says, hey, Grant, you have to take this case whether you like it or not because no one else wants it?
We've seen that on US movies where the public defender's appointed to, for somebody who's considered by community as a ratbag. It's generally the court can ask somebody to do that as... Yep. And sometimes that can be done on a pro bono basis or for whatever basis the court needs assistance if somebody knows what to do and knows how to advise, because otherwise the court time just gets churned up. I think, is there a mechanism? The worst thing is where somebody just continues to subvert their representation and it just becomes unmanageable. And so there's not a simple answer to that question. All I can say is that it's... there are various levels of complexity when it comes to people who sometimes don't want to be represented. They believe they deserve their day to have their say in a forum where people will listen to them.
Grant,
sometimes
I've got to.
I know it's time.
The news has come, so I've got to go, mate.
Okay, take care, Alan. Have a good one. Bye for now.
Bye.